Pole.
The splendors and miseries of an Old Bailey hack.
Some cases of Horace Rumpole, barrister at law, as told to and written down by John Mortimer, with Maurice Denham as Rumpole. Rumpole and the Case of Identity.
Have you seen this man? And were you in Darjeeling Road, Walthamstow, around 8:45 on Tuesday, March the 4th? The police want to interview a tall, well-built man, long sideburns, who was wearing a tartan cap when the manager of an off-license was attacked.
Ah.
Now, here's a
I'm
case of
now,
stolen
Mr.
jewelry.
Ah, right, lad.
Where the thieves...
One for the road?
Not really. It's the wife. Better he'll be waiting.
Eagerly, eh? Give old Freddy's love to the little lady.
This Albright minicars.
Albright will see you right. No, I'm Freddy Albright, the governor.
You an employee named Anstey, David Anstey.
Well, this is Dave. What's all this about?
You, Anstey?
What about it?
Anstey, I'm arresting you, and you will be charged with wounding...
What are you talking
with
about?
Intent to commit grievous bodily harm on Patrick Feenan,
right?
Manager of the Darjeeling Road off-license on the night of March the 4th last.
Me? I was never near a place.
Get your phone.
Don't worry. Freddy Albright will see you right.
The case of the off-license stabbing turned entirely on a question of identity. And when I saw Dave Anstey in Brixton Prison, he seemed optimistic about his chances.
Would I wear a tartan cap, Mr. Rumpole? Would I? Not if I was going to cut up some geezer in an off-license, unless I wanted to be recognised.
Well, unless someone wanted you to be recognised.
I'm not worried, Mr. Rumpole. I'm just not worried at all. I'm in the clear.
Now, this alibi of yours, it entirely depends on the evidence of your governor, Mr. Albright.
Yeah, I come back from a trip to Wembley, then Freddie took me for a curry.
Well, how can he fix the date?
It was the evening before his wedding anniversary. He'd got Mrs. Albright a gift.
What exactly?
It was an evening bag, highly tasteful, for his ladies' night down the Masons. He even showed it to me. Look, Mr. Rumpole, when's this job in the off-licence meant to have been done, eh?
8:45.
Right you are. 8:45 on the 4th of March, I was with Freddie Albright. He was having a go at the tandoori chicken and he was showing me this tasteful evening bag. It's cast iron, my alibi.
I'm not sure that I like cast iron alibis. They're the sort that sink the quickest to the bottom of the sea. A couple of weeks later, I was working late on Dave Anstey's case in Chambers and studying this strangely anonymous identikit photograph the police had issued. Was this the face that launched 1,000 ships? And did the stabbing in the Walthamstow off-license, I wondered. I was interrupted by an excited barrister.
Ah, Rumpole.
Mm.
Oh, are you burning the midnight oil?
Ah, Erskine Brown. Claude, look, I've got a case tomorrow that turns on identity. Now, how would you describe me exactly?
You? Why, for goodness sake?
Describe Rumpole as you saw him going into Chambers this morning. Hmm? Are you sure you did see me go into Chambers this morning? Can you swear you're not mistaken?
Of course I saw you coming into Chambers. Look, Rumpole...
Yeah, but how did you know it was me?
Well, it looked like you. Short and fat.
You mean, you're well filled out, generously proportioned, comfortable.
No, fat.
Are you sure it was me?
Of course it was you, Rumpole. It had your muffler and your dreadful old hat on.
Mm. My old hat on, exactly. You recognise the hat.
Rumpole, will you come and look at this? There's something very odd going on down the passage in Guthrie Featherstone's room.
Is he working late too?
No, he's not. But there's a light on under the door. And when I knocked, no one answered.
Erskine Brown became so insistent that I had to humour him. So off we set to the room of our learned head of chambers, Guthrie Featherstone, QC, MP.
You see, the door's locked.
Featherstone always locks his door. He's afraid people will come in and read his All England Law reports and pinch his paper clips.
Don't be frivolous, Rumpole. It's a question of chamber's security. You see, the light's on inside.
Yes, my God, you're right. Why are we whispering?
Shh, listen.
There was a small sound, only a whisper, like an intake of breath. Or perhaps it was only the sigh of the old building sinking into the ground.
Didn't you hear something?
Mice.
What?
Now these old places are overrun with mice.
No, it was a sound more like giggling.
Well, even mice can enjoy a joke occasionally. You've been working too hard, Claude. At the time of this night of adventure, a second typist joined our clerk's room.
She was a fairly personable young lady named Angela, who read time out and wore an American combat shirt of the sort that might have been bought second-hand from some Vietnam veteran. She had strong political views, as Erskine Brown discovered when he asked her to do some typing for him.
Ah, Angela, I wonder if you could spare me a second of your valuable time.
You want that typed out?
If you would be so good. Are you sure you can read it?
Whereas the plaintiffs, the Gargantua Trust Company Limited, are landlords of the said premises...
Brilliant, you can read it.
And the defendant is in default of rent to the extent of £206.13. Notice to quit having been given. Whose side are we on?
We are on the side, Angela, that sends us the work.
She got notice to quit. For a measly £206.13. Gargantua Trust Company Limited. Well, I don't imagine they're short for bobble.
Angela, you are not required to judge the case. That can be safely left in the hands of the judge of the Marylebone County Court.
I bet she's an elderly widow.
Of course she is, with 23 starving children. Look, Angela, it doesn't matter what she is. Just type it out. Now, Henry, is Mr. Featherstone in yet?
Yes, I'm expecting him any moment, sir.
I don't know what's the matter with our head of chambers. He used to be in here, bright as a button at 9:30. Now he descends on us at lunchtime, if we're lucky.
Oh,
Guthrie.
All night sitting. I don't know how long the old frame will stand it.
Guthrie, I wanted to raise the matter of security in chambers. The other night, there were lights left on in here.
Oh.
After you'd locked up.
I must have forgotten.
And I distinctly heard a sound coming from this room.
How extraordinarily odd.
Rumpole thought it might have been mice.
Oh, really?
And there's another matter I wanted to raise.
Another?
That new girl, Angela. The one who does the typing now.
Oh, Henry says she's a bit of an asset.
Huh.
I know nothing about her, of course, but it seems to me that Diane just couldn't cope single-handed.
But the girl objects to typing a landlord's statement of claim. Huh. She only wants to type on behalf of the tenant. It really does add a new horror to life at the bar if one's going to have all one's cases decided in the typing pool.
I really don't see how you can dignify those two girls, Diane and
Angela.
With the title of a typing pool. Anyway, Henry tells me she's extremely good. It seems she's pretty well indispensable.
Well, it's just something I thought should be brought to your attention. As a head with his finger on the pulse of Chambers.
Oh, come.
Excuse me, Mr. Erskine Brown.
No, I'm just going.
I wanted to have a word with you, Mr. Featherstone, sir.
I'm grateful to you, Claude, extremely grateful. Perhaps you form a small subcommittee to deal with the mice in chambers.
Very amusing. I'm afraid I'm rather too busy.
It's that new girl, Angela, Mr. Featherstone. Quite frankly, she's getting on my wick.
Oh, really, Henry? You do surprise me. Mr. Erskine Brown was just saying what an enormous help she is, typing his pleadings.
I was unaware at the time of the controversy surrounding our new typist. Indeed, I was busy down at the Old Bailey on the case of the off-license stabbing, in which my learned opponent, Miss Phillida Trant, was just calling the victim himself.
Mr. Feenan, can you describe the man who attacked you?
He had this red cap on.
Apart from the red cap?
Yes, apart from the red cap. Come on, Borgia.
Well, he was tall, big built.
Like about 20 million others.
Did you say something, Mr. Rumpole?
Nothing at all, my lord.
What about his hair? What you could see of it?
He had long sideburns, sort of brown colour, what I could see of it.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Feenan.
Mr. Feenan, if you look at my client, you can see quite clearly he has no sideburns at all.
No. No, he hasn't.
Mr. Rumpole, I'm sure you don't need reminding. We live in the age of the electric razor. Sideburns can be shaved off, if it is convenient to do so.
Yes. Now, you told us that they were sort of brown. A sort of ginger brown, greyish brown, blackish brown, or just brown brown. You know, we've heard the evidence of Mr. Smith, who was waiting for a bus outside the off-license. He told us about a man with a red tartan cap and black sideburns.
Well, I didn't have a lot of time to notice him. It was that quick.
That quick? You only saw him, didn't you, for a matter of seconds?
Yes.
So my client stands on trial for a couple of seconds?
It'll no doubt be considerably longer by the time you finish, Mr. Rumpole.
Mr. Justice Vosper was at it again, trying to make a joke.
Coming for a spot of lunch, Rumpole?
Well, later, just going out to the Yancey.
Yes, how are we doing?
I beg your pardon?
I'm Freddie Albright, Dave's governor. Albright, we'll see you right. You know, that's my motto, Mr. Rumpole. In many cars,
as in life.
Our alibi witness.
Oh, certainly, Mr. Rumpole. Alibi ready and waiting. Any time you want it. Must look after young Dave. Oh, and Mrs. Anstey, of course.
I'm Dave's wife, Betty.
A lovely girl, Betty. Exceptionally lovely girl.
Exceptionally. Dave Anstey's wife was, in fact, a luxurious blonde, snuggling warmly into an extremely expensive fur coat.
And an exceptionally beautiful fur coat you have on, Mrs. Anstey.
Oh, thanks ever so.
What's the chances, then?
Oh, sorry, old darling, can't talk to witnesses. Mrs. Anstey could come into court if she wants to.
I can't go into that court, Mr. Rumpole. Not to have everyone staring at me because of David. Dave's all right, isn't he?
As well as can be expected. I'm sure he'd appreciate a visit down the cells.
I promised the young lady a lunch, Mr. Rumpole. Better get our skates on, Betty. We don't want some lawyer nicking our table at the Savoy now, do we, Mr. Rumpole?
Ah, Dave, I've been thinking. I'm a bit worried.
Yes, Mr. Rumpole?
Look, if an alibi comes unstuck, everything comes unstuck. See, they may not believe you, Dave, just because they don't believe your alibi.
They'll believe Freddy. Freddy's got no axe to grind.
Hasn't he? I've been doing a bit of research. Freddy Albright owns the off-license where Paddy was cut. Did you know that?
Straight up, I didn't. Does it make any difference?
I don't know. Feenan picked you out at the ID parade. You'd never seen him before.
Never in me life, straight up.
Someone must have told him about you and your remarkable headgear. You trust Freddy Albright?
You must be joking. The things the governor's done for me, big bonus when we married, canteen of cutlery, must have cost him 200 nicker.
And a fur coat.
What's that?
I was just wondering where your wife got her fur coat from, Dave.
What sort of coat, exactly?
Oh, God knows, but some rare animal gave up its life for it.
I bet he works, don't she? She saved up for it. You've got to call the governor, Mr. Rumpole. Freddy's promised. He'll see me all right.
It was at about that time that Claude Erskine Brown, his fiancée, Miss Phillida Trant, came out of Covent Garden Opera House and, still hell-bent on pleasure, planned a trip the light fantastic at a disco or Palais de Hop.
La donne mobile, lum, bum, 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 bum.
Wasn't Domingo magnificent?
Perfectly splendid.
Tired, Philly?
No, not really. Why don't we dance?
Whatever for?
We never do.
But, Philly, for goodness sake.
There's a new place opened in Covent Garden. Fridays. The BPs go there.
For what?
Beautiful people. I just don't think Guthrie Featherstone is very well.
In my humble opinion, our head of chambers is losing his grip. I say, steady on, Philly, or do yourself an injury.
Oh, what are you doing? Oh, look over there.
What?
That girl.
Oh, God, it's Angela.
The typist who came to us from time out. Angela.
Say, who's she dancing with?
Apparently with herself. Huh. No, she's with a man in a rather violent shirt.
Really?
Who is he?
Can't see a thing. It's pitch dark in here, Philly. It's like the black hole of Calcutta.
I think it's rather fun.
I say, look out, they're going.
It isn't... Oh, it can't possibly be.
Oh, my God, it is. Oh, Philly, this is quite appalling.
Guthrie Featherstone.
Our head of chambers. Out dancing with the typing pool.
Usher. That woman, Mrs. Betty Anstey.
Yes, Mr. Rumpole.
I want her brought into court when I give the word. Oh, and don't give her a moment to slip her coat off.
8:45. Well, of course I was with Dave at 8:45. I took him for a courier date and we was together till 9:30.
Now, can you fix the date?
Absolutely. My wife's birthday.
And what's the date of that?
March the 5th.
Yeah.
It's the same every year. I'd got her an evening bag and I told Dave about it when I met him the next day.
The next day?
Right. The next day, when we went for the curry.
That would be March the 6th.
That's right, my lord.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the day before your wife's birthday.
Well, March the 4th? Well, I don't know what Dave was doing then. No, I tell a lie.
Do you, Mr. Albright?
Was it a Tuesday, March the 4th?
Yes.
Oh, then Dave had the night off.
I remember he'd been off a couple of nights before we went to the Mogul Palace. You know, the Indian restaurant in Walthamstow.
So you don't know what Mr. Anstey was doing on the night of the 4th?
I haven't a clue, my lord.
You may like to remind the jury, Mr. Rumpole, that the stabbing of the off-license took place on the 4th of March.
Mr. Albright, did you not sign a statement making it clear that you were with Mr. Anstey on the evening of the 4th of March?
Well, I may have done, yes.
My lord, is my learned friend entitled to cross-examine his own witness?
If the witness is hostile, yes.
Well, does my learned friend suggest that the witness is hostile to him?
No, I suggest that the witness is hostile to the truth.
If the witness has signed a previous inconsistent statement, you may cross-examine him.
Thank you.
If you think that's a wise course, Mr. Rumpole.
I am obliged to your lordship. Mr. Albright, is your company the landlord of the off-license where Feenan was stabbed?
Well, it might be.
And what do you mean by that? Is your business empire so vast you can't be sure where your boundaries lie?
We've got the lease on the off-license, yes.
So Feenan was working for you?
He might have been.
And what was he doing? Putting his hand in the till, not paying his dues? Did you have to send someone to teach him a lesson?
Someone?
Who are you suggesting someone might be, Mr. Rumpole?
Someone you sent in a cap like that worn by my client, Dave Anstey.
Oh, now, would I do a thing like that, Mr. Rumpole?
Usher. Fetch her in now.
All right, Mr. Rumpole.
Mr. Albright, are you friendly with my client's wife, Betty?
Well, I'm like a father to them both, yeah.
And whilst my client's been in custody, have you been seeing Betty Anstey regularly?
Well, I've tried to take her out of herself, yes.
Has taking her out of herself included buying her an expensive fur coat? The one she's wearing now? That is my client's wife in the mink, isn't it?
Well, I may have lent her a bob or two, you know, tied her over.
Yeah. Thank you, Mrs. Anstey. Mr. Albright, has your object in this case always been to have Dave Anstey convicted?
Look, I put March the 4th first because Dave asked me to.
He asked you to?
He said it was the date of the stabbing night. Look, I'm sorry, I can't help you, Mr. Rumpole.
Well, I'm sorry I can't help you, Mr. Albright, in your attempt to get your mistress's husband put inside for a long period of years.
Mr. Rumpole, is there any basis for that suggestion?
Well, if there isn't, perhaps my learned friend will call the lady to rebut it. She's still outside the court. You sent your hireling, wearing that entirely recognizable cap, to teach Paddy a lesson. So, Paddy identified him.
May I remind you, Mr. Rumpole? When your client was picked out at the identification parade, he wasn't wearing a cap.
No, of course not, my lord. Perhaps you'd care to tell us, Albright, who was it that gave Feenan his instructions? Didn't Feenan know who you wanted fitted up with this little enterprise and the off-license?
Fitted up is hardly a legal term, Mr. Rumpole. It makes it sound like a cupboard.
Then shall we say framed, Albright? It sounds like a picture. In this case, the wrong picture entirely.
After the turmoil of the Old Bailey and when the jury had given their verdict, I went for a refreshing beaker of Chateau off-license to my old watering hole, Pomeroy's Wine Bar.
Rumpole?
Oh, there you are.
Hey, smashing victory. Hmm? We bought you a bottle of claret.
Oh, thank you. No. Out 4 hours, not guilty by a majority. It was a damn close-run thing. Mr. Freddy Albright didn't look exactly happy.
You should have heard Rumpole deal with a hostile witness.
Go on, Billy.
Well, thanks. Yeah,
good health.
Cheers.
Cheers.
That's good. Rumpole, it's high time that a little justice was done to you.
Justice?
It's a rotten shame. You should have been head of chambers long ago. It was yours as the senior man. Everybody thought so. Of course, in those days, we didn't know the truth about Guthrie Featherston.
Oh, no? And what is the truth about Mr. Guthrie Featherston, QC MP?
Claw quite honestly thinks he's lost his marbles.
He's quite simply having it off with that female communist from the typing pool.
I'd just like to know why you're making this extraordinary suggestion.
Well, Claude and I saw Guthrie Featherston dancing in Fridays.
The QC MP dancing?
Mm. Yes.
Well, what's your evidence for that?
The evidence of my own eyes, Rumpole.
The evidence of people's own eyes can, as Miss Trant knows, be extremely unconvincing. Did you see his face?
What about the sideburns?
We didn't see his face exactly.
No, he had his back to us, but she was there.
Well, the communist menace of the clerk's room.
And Guthrie was wearing some sort of multicoloured shirt with flowers on it.
Then it couldn't have been Guthrie Featherstone.
Of course it was.
Highly unlikely. Guthrie Featherstone simply doesn't wear multicoloured shirts with flowers on them.
I wondered if I was to spend the rest of my life defending our head of chambers on various charges. It wasn't so long ago that I won him an acquittal in a nasty matter of proposed divorce before his wife Marigold. Well, if this sort of thing went on, I'd have no time for paying clients. I sought Featherstone out in his lair.
Ah, Horace. Henry said you wanted to see me.
Well, don't you want to see me?
Not particularly.
Well, I'd say you needed a little help.
I'm perfectly all right, thank you, Rumpel.
Well, here. A young Erskine Brown alleges he saw you dancing.
With Angela?
Huh. Claude Erskine Brown suspects you of having a red in the bed, so far as I can gather.
All right.
Hmm?
It's all true. It's perfectly true, Rumpel.
You plead guilty.
As a matter of fact, it's all terribly innocent. Jumping about in Fridays until 2 o'clock in the morning. Then back for an hour or two in her ridiculously narrow bed in Oakley Street. And off to breakfast in the House of Commons.
Oh, that must be the worst part about it.
What?
Breakfast in the House of Commons.
Yes.
So you're obviously not cut out for that type of existence.
The physical strain is exhausting.
Oh, I imagine so. Must come as a terrible shock to a man only used to somnolent parliamentary debates and a little golf.
Ah, golf. Yes, it all happened when I sliced a drive into the rough. I went behind a patch of low scrub, and there were a boy and girl making love. Oh, not undressed, you understand. No great white bottoms weaving in the air. No, just kissing each other and laughing. I felt then there was an entire world I had totally missed. Next morning I came into chambers and saw Angela. She's 21, Rumpel. Can you imagine it?
With difficulty. So you set out quite deliberately to destroy your position in chambers.
Deliberately?
Well, of course, locking yourself in this room. What on earth was that for?
We couldn't go back to Oakley Street. Her flatmate was entertaining a man from the BBC World Service.
Barrister's chambers have been put to many uses, Featherstone, but only rarely as a setting for a French farce. Now, look, Featherstone. My dear Guthrie, you can't do it.
Do what exactly?
Escape. You came to us a ready-made figure of respectability. What are you going to do now? Abandon us like a lot of aging wives?
Why can't I?
Because it was decided differently for you. When your mother gave proud birth to another Featherstone. When you became the youngest prefect at Marlborough. When you humbly asked the Lord Chancellor for a pair of QC's knee breeches and took Marigold's advice on a suspender belt for your silk stockings. And when you got yourself elected head of chambers. But it's all mapped out for you, Guthrie. The tram lines are leading to Solicitor General in the next middle-of-the-road Conservative Labour government.
I don't have to do all that.
Well, what's the alternative? Hanging round Oakley Street waiting for the man from the BBC to go on night duty? Scratching a living, writing advice from a barrister in the Sunday papers? Now, come on. Come off it. That's someone else entirely. That's not Guthrie Featherstone.
You're jealous.
Am I?
Just because you can't escape.
Can't I? Well, of course I can. I'm a free soul, a soul entirely free.
No, just because you're tied hand and foot by the income tax and the VAT man, and when Henry's going to find you another brief, and she who must be obeyed.
Featherstone, is that any way to speak of Mrs. Hilda Rumble?
I don't know. You do.
Oh, that, sir, is a husband's privilege. Anyway, why do you say I'm jealous?
I don't know. Is it because you want to be the only anarchist in chambers?
Was there a certain truth in what he said? Had Guthrie Featherstone put his finger on the Achilles heel of Rumpole? Did I need him to make me feel a free, roving spirit?
Whatever the truth of the matter, Featherstone soon returned to his true identity. He had to prosecute a number of Angela's friends for being concerned in the circulation of cannabis resin. I arranged for her to attend court. She banged out in disgust, and none of us ever saw her again. As for me, I made the position quite clear at our chamber's party, our annual bean feast.
Rumpo?
Hmm?
Rumpo, have you thought about what we suggested? You know, taking over.
Ah, I've looked into it most carefully, and I'm quite sure you've been mistaken about our head of chambers.
What?
I believe him to be the innocent victim of a case of mistaken identity. Miss Trant will understand what that means.
What are you up to now?
Well, it may very well be. There's been someone, a totally different someone, masquerading as Guthrie Featherstone.
Oh, really, Rumpole?
Well, all I can tell you for certain is our respected head of chambers is clearly not the person you saw whooping it up in the disco. I mean, look at him now, graciously escorting his lovely wife at our Christmas celebration. Look at him carefully, Erskine Brown. Observe him closely, Miss Trant. Is that the man you saw? No, oh, certainly not. Do I make myself clear?
Not in the least, Rumpo.
I just want to welcome you all, members and wives and girlfriends who are members also, to our annual Christmas do. Now, we have had a pretty good year, Henry tells me, in chambers.
Oh, so that's why he's got a new suit on.
We have managed to stick together throughout the year.
Except for one departure in the typing department.
Did you wish to say something, Harry?
I would just like to say that he which hath no stomach to this fight, let him depart. His passport shall be made and crowns for Conroy put into his purse. We would not plead in that man's company that fears his fellowship to plead with us. Now, when people speak of a split in chambers, or of the possibility of any other head but our distinguished QC MP, they're making a grave error, like the mistakes in identity which may do such terrible injustice in our courts. My learned leader, Guthrie Featherstone, is a man fashioned by nature to be head of chambers. He couldn't possibly be anything else. So, we Old Bailey hacks, we common soldiers of the bar, will attack a new year under his flag, crying together, God for Guthrie, Miss Trant and Erskine Brown! Henry and Diane be in our flowing cups, freshly remembered. Sorry, Featherstone, old darling. You're lumbered with it now.
That was Maurice Denham as Rumpole in The Case of Identity. Mr. Justice Vosper was Robert Harris, Guthrie Featherstone, Michael Spice, Erskine Brown, Brian Carroll, Miss Trant, Amanda Murray, Angela, Judy Franklin, Henry, Hayden Wood, Feenan, John Church, Detective Inspector Ives, Michael McStay, Freddie Albright, David Dacre, Betty Anstey, Rowena Roberts, and Dave Anstey, Philip Davis. Rumpole and the Case of Identity was written by John Mortimer and directed by Peter King.